We're operating this episode of the OHL podcast on the honor system. The way that the series is fell and our episodes get released, you're going to have to take my word and Dan Mahar's word for the predictions that we'll share with you for the second round series. We did exchange text messages. We think we have enough credit in the bank with you that you'll buy into what we're trying to sell you when it comes to predictions, because I'm not sure actually how well we're doing in that regard, Dan. But nonetheless, round two is underway. And I'll quickly start with this. I think, you know, as much as I'm an advocate for 1-16 and reseeding that way after the first round, and we could have had a Saginaw Flint, for example, in the first round if we did go 1-15, boy, oh boy, did the Ontario Hockey League land some dandy second round series. As you got the Northern rivals with Sudbury and North Bay. You've got London and Kitchener in the Midwest. Fantastic. You've got the Memorial Cup hosts in Saginaw versus, not to be disrespectful, but kind of the Memorial Cup wannabe hosts in Sault Ste. Marie. So a lot of drama there away from the games. And Ottawa, Oshawa, no slouch either. So four great series. I'll throw it now to you, Dan, and shut up for a minute. Let's start with Sudbury and North Bay and the Battalion out to a 2-0 series lead.
Yeah, Mike, when you talk about our predictions, the viewers are going to know that I'm not lying when they see how I'm doing. So, so yeah, North Bay up 2-0. I had called Sudbury to win this one just based on the fact they look like they pieced it together with that really deep playoff type roster in round one, rolling over Mississauga. But I should not be at all shocked that North Bay has had an answer for that. I think the main reason why I lean Sudbury was the injury problems, suspension problems that North Bay is dealing with. When you have your 50 goal man, Anthony Romani, you have number one goalie, potentially number one goalie in the league, Dom DeVincenzis out. You have Liam Arnsby, your captain, out with suspension. To me, those are pretty big losses to go into the second round against Sudbury, but here they're just rolling. So I think full credit to that veteran playoff battle-tested roster in North Bay. That's what we're seeing here. And they've had an answer. They're tough to score on. They bolstered that lineup with the trade with Sarnia. They've kind of got a bit of everything you need to win. So I'm not shocked it's 2-0 North Bay. I just didn't predict that.
Well, you and I both predicted Sudbury in six. And I think for the same reasons here, the injuries to such key players that the North Bay Battalion, had suffered, right? Their 50 goal man in Romani's not there. The stud goaltender, as you've already outlined, is not there. It goes on and on. And yeah, you got to like the Sudbury Wolves first round. So you figure, okay, first round's kind of the toughest, right? Start feeling the playoffs, start thinking of what's to come. And so we both had Sudbury in six. Of course, it could still go that way, but Sudbury would naturally be winning the next four straight games. What a start for North Bay. And you mentioned the trade with Sudbury and how well it has panned out for the trade with Sarnia and how well it's panned out for North Bay. Who steps up in game one? Andrew LeBlanc for them, right? Sandis Filmanis has been a nice piece ever since they got him. And I'm looking at a guy like Justin Ertl, for example, who has really stepped up, a veteran when you need him to be there for you. And he's got 5 goals already in these playoffs, including 3 now in this series versus Sudbury. And what can you say in the absence of Dom DeVincentis about Mike McIver, the goaltender of the week, and rightly so? How about baptism by fire, or being thrown into said fire? And what a great story he is. Although it's always been said, it's not a series until the home team loses. And that, of course, has not yet happened.
For sure. I absolutely have to mention the work of Mike McIver stepping into that hole and not missing a beat, throwing up the 5-1, 9.15 save percentage. So yeah, he's been brilliant. And also, you know, there's just a few key pieces there. I think we talked about it coming into the playoffs that are quietly extremely important pieces. One of my favorite players in this league for the last several years has been Paul Christopoulos on defense. Just plays a quiet, classy game, can do it all, can move the puck, can skate, can turn outside with the guys on speed, can clear the front of the net. He does everything you want out of a defender, and quietly, right? Just kind of does his job, doesn't get a lot of fanfare, doesn't rack up a ton of points. But when you have pieces like that, well, can we call them depth, depth pieces? I mean, it could probably play in a top pairing on most teams, but still, in that roster, you have so many of those pieces that they can be hard to deal with over a 6-7 game series.
I will remind you again that I had North Bay Saginaw as my OHL final when these playoffs began. I just was concerned about the injuries. You mentioned the Arnsby suspension that might slow this North Bay train down, but you got to like the team that was there last year, probably still has the sour taste in its mouth, recognizes that this is the chance now. After this, it's going to be slim pickings in North Bay for a little bit. So they're really coming prepared, giving it their all. Take your pick. And it's not over till the home team loses in a series. But even if the home team keeps winning, North Bay does have home ice advantage in this one based on the regular season standings. It's been fun to watch, and I think it's a great matchup for the league. The other Eastern Conference matchup, again, I don't think anybody is going to accuse us of being dishonest because you had Ottawa in six. I had Ottawa in seven. And I think the Oshawa Generals are enjoying perhaps the talk of, wow, what happened to Oshawa in round one, right? They come into the playoffs on a 12-game heater. They drop the opener. Depending on how you feel about a video review, we talked about all of this last week versus Barrie. They might have been down 3-2 heading into game six. Instead, they were up and they ended up winning the series in six games. But it wasn't as easy as many expected. Credit to Barrie on that for sure. And then on the other hand, you get the quote unquote, and I will use the air quotes, upset of Ottawa over Brantford, but 1-6 in the East was so tight. I don't know how you call any of those series an upset, but it was the sixth seeded Ottawa 67s over the number three Brantford Bulldogs. And that's why I thought, much like we just talked about with Sudbury, you've got an Ottawa team, a little bit different than Sudbury in that been there, done that, a tremendous pedigree playoffs. You talked last week, Dan, about the additions that James Boyd went out and made at the trade deadline and how well they performed in round one. I thought, well, now you've got a runaway train and it's going to be really hard to slow them down. I guess the Oshawa Generals, at least in the first two games, found a way to do that. So you have 67s and six. I have 67s and seven. Still not over, but it's the Jennies with the 2-0 series lead.
You hit the nail on the head when you said, are there any of these really upsets? And they could have all the entire Eastern Conference could have gone either way in any of these series. But I think we both saw how impressive Ottawa was in round one and thought, wow, they took out a really viable opponent, a battle-tested opponent, not easily, but relatively efficiently. And then you come up against an Oshawa team who had some challenges against that Barrie team, the eight-seeded Barrie team. And you start to think, well, looking at round one, I'm starting to be a believer in this Ottawa team. That's how I made my choice anyway. And not that they're done at 2-0 here by any stretch, but I think there's some subtle things going on in this series. I think in round one, I don't know if Oshawa was a little bit overconfident. I think maybe a couple of players were dealing with something. Connor Punnett didn't look totally 100% to start that series. I think he is now. I think that team's kind of rounding into form. Callum Ritchie's completely rolling right now. So I think you've got some big bodies in Oshawa that are learning to play that effective playoff style, getting in on the forecheck, putting the body on some of the puck movers like Henry Muse back on the back end, and they're having trouble with it. And once you start to find that recipe and formula, the other team's going to have to counter. And I think right now Ottawa's licking their wounds a bit and saying, you know, we're down 2-0. We got to counter here. What is the answer to this Oshawa team? Because they're playing discipline, they're playing positional, and they're finishing those checks. And that's causing a lot of grief for Ottawa. And I mean, I could see Oshawa winning this series, but when you see that with the ease they won game two, it's got to be a concern for Dave Cameron.
Oshawa is extremely well coached. They are buying into, and I think we argued that in the regular season, buying into what Derek Laxdal was selling from behind the bench, and maybe a year early, but playing so well, and now they've got their eyes on something much, much bigger, of course. You talk about some of those big bodies. Look, we weren't sure last week that, in fact, I was pretty confident that Beckett Seneca would be suspended for that hit on Keshawn Aitchison. He did not get suspended, and he's been a force in this series through two games with 3 goals and an assist. What can you say about Dylan Roebrecht, who's, again, I'm going to go back to that player of the week, already mentioning Mike McIver, the OHL's goaltender of the week, at Roebrecht, the player of the week, but he's been terrific in the series so far. And you got to give a nod to the guy between the pipes. He had the save of the night on Sunday night in the Ontario Hockey League without his glove. His trapper came off after he made a glorious blocker save. So Jacob Oster has really started to feel it as well. And look, Ottawa's going back home. That should be at least one of the ingredients if you want the recipe for success and to turn this series around. But The Oshawa Generals seem to be feeling the sorts of things they were feeling as the regular season came to an end.
Is that picture of Oster, the picture of the playoffs, Mike, the bare hand up, still ready to make the save? That's a goalie that's zoned in, right? He's locked in, and he has been all year. And you're right about Derek Lakstahl and the accountability he demands from that roster. And this is when it shows up. And yeah, we weren't sure about Beckett Seneca playing in these games based on that hit, but he is, and boy, is he playing in these games. Didn't miss a beat. And, you know, when you look at an NHL draft eligible player like him in this upcoming draft, starting to hear some whispers that this is a top 15 pick, potentially even top 10 to 12, based on the play we're seeing in the playoffs right now. So this is the time of year when players establish what they are, what their legacy will be, and Beckett Seneca is sure carving his legacy.
When you put your hand up like that, I thought you were asking about the picture over my right shoulder here. If you're watching on YouTube, and I don't know what happened to my camera, so apologies for that. It just took a little blip on me, but we're still here. That's Mike Palmateer, my favorite all-time Toronto Maple Leafs goalie. Fun little quick story. I did a card show, a sports and collectible show with Mike Palmateer 100 years ago. And he gave me a signed copy of that picture as a thank you for helping him out at the desk, right? I don't know, but it was part of my role in media. I can't remember exactly why I ended up there. It doesn't matter. But the neat thing about that picture, and Mike is sure to point it out to you when he signs it, is his eyes are closed as he's catching the puck. So obviously it just caught him mid-blink, but it looks pretty good. He's making saves with his eyes closed. So Jacob Oster can make them without his glove. Mikey Palmateer back in the day was making glove saves with his eyes closed for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And if you know anything about the Leafs in that era, any save from a goaltender, eyes open or closed, was a welcome sight for Leafs fans like me. All right, let's move on to the Western Conference. And the London Knights are yet to taste defeat in these playoffs. So we've got three of these series off to 2-0 starts, right? North Bay up on Sudbury, Oshawa up on Ottawa, and London up on Kitchener. As I said, six now in a row for the London Knights, and they have been an absolute wagon, just three regulation losses in 45 or so games now going back to the regular season. I will say this about what I've seen through 120 minutes of hockey so far in this series, and that is London, by any measure and any estimation, is a dirty hockey team. After every single whistle, there's a slash, there's a cross check, there's a face wash or a jab to the face or side of the head, whatever the case may be. There are a lot of antics. It's a game. It's a style that they obviously like to play, get a little bit of intimidation going, and then they carry it over a little bit further. There are antics with taunting benches. If you end up in the penalty box, they don't like to sit down and just take their 2 minutes or 5 minutes, as the case may be. They'll bark, they'll chirp, they'll gesture at the other players who are on the ice or in the penalty box. I understand completely that the sight of 9,000 fans in a junior hockey arena is a really good sight to the Ontario Hockey League. It looks really good. It gives you a really pro feel. All kinds of good things and feelings can come from that. I'm not sure some of these antics are the best in terms of optics for the Ontario Hockey League, but if you like success, if you like winning, then you like this sort of thing.
They sure take on the personality of their coach, right? Dale Hunter hockey. That's kind of how he always played the game and had a lot of success with it, breeds it in his players. And, you know, for me, I'm very much a line guy, right? There's stepping up and getting into the heat of the battle, and some things will happen. Emotions will boil over. You want a team that can toe that line in the playoffs and bring it and not back down and not play scared. However, I also believe there's a line too. And the parts that I hate, I think the after the whistle stuff just absolutely drives me nuts because it can be regulated. And we saw that in round one. We saw, you know, the Erie Otters and Kitchener Rangers right early in that series, the officials first sign of anything after whistle, they called one guy and it stopped. You just get rid of it. And after the whistle, play between the whistles, right? And the parts that I will always have issues with are intense danger, when part of the game plan is to be physical on a guy, finish your hits, do all that stuff. But when the intention is to try and take players out of the game, there's a line. And then the second piece that you talk about antics, and I'm just talking across the board here, the things I hate to see. is the taunting of benches back and forth. Like that's the there's no place in that for me. I think it's just a horrible example. No, it's not gamesmanship. It's not toughen up. That's part of the game. It's just poor sportsmanship. It's just general idiocy, really. I mean, you can play the game with class and respect. You can play it hard. You can do all these things. You look at the NHL game. I know this junior hockey, they're young, they're immature, but you look at the NHL, very little of that from the there's sure there's chirping going back and forth, but there's not the taunting of the benches after goals. There's not the some of this stuff that you see that just is a little bit of a clown show at times. So I think to me, always sportsmanship will be a key part of it, especially as an example to the kids. So, and this was a long rant for just saying the things that bother me that I think the league could address and take out of the game. This goes across the board in the OHL. Taunt a bench, misconduct. It's simple, right? You score a goal, act like you've been there before, celebrate with your teammates, go to the bench, period. So these are some of the things I think they just need to clean up league wide. But I'm hearing you, Mike.
Yeah, I think it's a fair point. And again, I'll come back to the optics and what sort of image you want to come out of these games. There's no question. And it's odd to me that it seems to be unique to the games that we're seeing in the London Kitchener series. Perhaps it speaks to the long-standing rivalry between the divisional opponents. You cannot argue that the London Knights sure do know how to back it up. And when you start running through that roster, oh my goodness, like from the goaltending and OHL champion Michael Simpson on out with Bonk and George and Edward and the whole gang. And then Easton Cowan's now on a 42 game heater going back to the regular season. I mean, it's the stuff the championship teams are made of. And if the Kitchener Rangers have any intention of clawing their way back into this series, first and foremost, it has to start in game number three. And secondly, what has been the story of the series outside of how well London has played and how intimidating they are as a hockey club is the power outage for the Kitchener Rangers power play. I should point out, before I give you another thought on that, you picked London in five in this series based on our predictions. I took Kitchener in seven. Anybody that knows me at all knows that I spend an awful lot of time with these young men throughout the course of a season and have for the better part of 2 decades now. So picking against the team that you spend all this time with is like picking against your own kid. However, I will also add that Shohei Ohtani's translator gave me a call and said he'd like to lay money on Knights in five. So I'll just leave that there. Bottom line, Dan, is the Rangers, look, the second game was a little more lopsided. The first game, I think, was there for the taking. But even in game two, the Rangers had an extended 5-on-3. They couldn't score on it. The power play has been 0 for 10. That is a big factor to me in this series so far.
100%, Mike. And I think, yeah, we addressed some of the antics and the sideshow stuff that we felt had to be addressed. But let's moving to the hockey side, credit where credit's due. London, that's that, and I think that's my point as it pertains to London on the end. They don't need the antics, they don't need this stuff. They're a good hockey team. They play a solid structured game. That 0 for 10 Kitchener has rung up on the power play is largely due to a really effective penalty killing scheme. So you can look at up and down the lineup how that London Knights hockey team plays, and this is why I predicted them in five, was almost tempted in four. They have a formula that works. They know how to play the Kitchener Rangers, bang them, be physical. Kitchener will back off, and then you can run the show. Use your power play, continue to get in their face, get to the front of the net. They don't have a lot of big bodies to move it out. They rely heavily on the top four D. Bang them, they're going to get fatigued and make mistakes. So anyway, you can see all these things coming into play throughout the course of this series. So London on the hockey side is very smart. They know how to do it. They know how to roll the lines. They all buy in. They all play their positions. They all finish their checks. They all do the things you need to do to play against Kitchener. And they know Kitchener hasn't had an answer for that through most of the regular season the last couple of years, as well as the playoffs. So keep applying it and make them adapt to you. And unless you see them adapt to you, just going to keep working.
I love what you said about, kind of establishing something and then running the show. And that's exactly what I noticed through the first couple of games. It seems like a pretty easy game plan. Let's go out there, set this tone in this manner. And then by the second period, we're basically just going to do what we want. You talked about London's power play, and I want to add in their penalty kill. If I'm not mistaken, Dan, and I could be, but I think Dale Hunter was the first to begin using a five forward power play unit a long time ago. I'm pretty sure he was the first to do it in the OHL. And you got to hand it to the Knights when it comes to the way they have decided to kill penalties. I don't know if the 28 shorties they scored this year was a record. If it wasn't, holy Hannah, but they're now, they can engage, quite frankly, in whatever antics they want if they're not afraid even an iota of taking a penalty against, because they know they can burn you. And I said this during the regular season, it even goes beyond the aggressive nature of the penalty kill in terms of if there's a 50-50 puck, boy, oh boy, you're going to have a hard time winning that battle against London. But they're willing to sacrifice a player inside the blue line, and they'll leave only three guys in there because somebody else is blowing the zone for the shorthanded scoring chance. And I think this was something, you know, power plays tend to be a little bit, I don't want to use the word lazy, but there's certainly less urgency in many cases. I think particularly in junior hockey, where you can really freewheel and have some fun and pad your stats on the power play. And I think the Knights recognized that and thought, you know what, we're going to exploit this. If you're going to be on the power play against us, you're going to still earn it as if it was 5-on-5. Anyway, I'm going on quite a length here, but I really think they found something in the game at this level that they could exploit. And they brought it to the league this year. And boy, oh boy, I'd rather play the Knights 5-on-5. Thank you very much.
You nailed it when you talked about the blowing the zone. And to me, that's a confidence. There's a swagger that London always seems to have. And it's called playing on your toes. And when you play on your toes, your opponent often plays on their heels. And when you see that dynamic occurring, you want to be the team staying on their toes. And if the other team's not adjusting, it just gets ugly over the course of the series. And London has this way of continuing to do that to opponents because they play with that confidence. They're not afraid to take those chances and try and burn the opponent on the stretch pass and on the blowing the zone. And the thing that I would give London the most credit for in the entire league is recognizing not only how to force some of those mistakes, but how to pounce on them and make the opponent pay for them. Too often a mistake will occur, a team will get, the feet won't get moving, and the opponent kind of lets them off the hook. They weren't in the right position. They weren't ready to go. They weren't ready to pounce when the puck squirted loose. London never gets caught napping there. London's anticipating the mistake and pouncing. And it's a good lesson for every kid that's watching, every young team that wants to play the game. You watch what those London Knights are doing when they don't have the puck, when they're away from the puck battle. They're always engaged. Their brains are engaged. Where might this go? Anticipating the play and then ready to pounce. And so often they catch the opponent off guard. And that's a hockey IQ thing. That's a compete level thing. That's something that all these players need to try to learn to achieve if they want to make it to the next level. Because when you get to the NHL, they're all anticipating pretty well. They're rarely caught napping. But in junior, you still get some of that napping.
I'll say again, a series is not over until the home team loses a game. But the Kitchener Rangers are really going to have to find another gear, another level, whatever it is, as this series shifts back to the Memorial Auditorium. The only series that is a series so far, and frankly, the one I had the hardest time deciding my prediction on, they are playing game 3 as we record this episode of the OHL podcast. But of course, I'm talking about the Saginaw Spirit and Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds. It's a series because the home team has already lost a game. Sioux takes game 2 in Saginaw, so it's 1-1 as they play game 3 as we speak up at the GFL Memorial Gardens in Sault Ste. Marie. You had Saginaw in 7. I had Saginaw in 6. What do you think of the series so far?
So far, exactly what I expected, Mike. And I'm with you. I had a really tough time picking this series. I think at the end of the day, that Saginaw roster did everything to earn the nod in these predictions, from the coaching staff right down through the bottom end of that roster, the GM who acquired all the pieces at the deadline. So I just couldn't find a good reason to go against Saginaw. And probably the closest reason I would have had was Sioux, because Sioux is a fantastic team. And that's why I had it going wire to wire. And what I look for in playoff hockey, Mike, especially when you get to the second round, you shouldn't be seeing teams roll over teams in the second round. What you should see is punch, counter punch. And that's what we saw. Saginaw looked great in game 1, had a great game plan, put a really terrific hockey team on their heels. So what happens? Off day, John Dean and his staff prep that team right back up. Sue comes right back at you and turns the tide in game 2. And to me, that's playoff hockey. That's two warrior teams that can do damage, that can lay a hurt. So now, okay, your move, Saginaw. What are you going to do for game 3 up in the Sioux? You've got to make a counterpoint to now. You've seen what we've done to combat what you were doing to us. Now, what are you going to do? And these, to me, are by far the most intriguing series Both teams loaded with weapons, both teams loaded with smarts and hustle and compete. It could go either way. Just two fantastic teams.
Yeah, it really could. And as good as Sault Ste. Marie is, I thought the depth and the acquisitions to build that depth into the Spirit roster is why I leaned their way. And obviously, I've said this before, I'll say again, I know the determination in Saginaw to go in through the front door, right? You don't want, you're going to the Memorial Cup no matter what, because you're hosting it. But the Saginaw Spirit very much want to go through the front door, kind of earn their way into it. The Jordan Dintino hat trick was the difference in game two of the series. Not perhaps the player you would be thinking about to come up with those big goals, two of them in the third period, but he did. Of interest to me in that second game was the 5-minute major assessed to Greyhounds captain Bryce McConnell Barker for a check to the head, which injured Saginaw goaltender Andrew Oak. There were questions being asked about whether or not this would lead to supplemental discipline. I didn't see any. So if it's not out by the time we're recording this episode with the Sioux playing, clearly he's going to be able to play.
And just an update note of that, Mike, I saw officially announced that he will not be facing no suspension for Bryce McConnell Barker. So, and yeah, we both saw that play. I think, we know Bryce McConnell Barker is not a dirty player. He's had his own concussion issues from a hit. So it looked to me like it was one of those classic plays, right? The goalie goes behind the net to play the puck. Ford coming in fast, trying to be aggressive, trying to get on the forecheck. And at some point of no return where you've got to either decide, I'm not going aggressively here, or I've got to do something because I can't. And I think he just crossed the line where he realized, shoot, I've got nowhere to go here. And the freight train just kind of came right through where Andrew Oak was. So the optics weren't great. You don't like seeing it. I like to see a player apply the brakes there, but I don't think there was any dirty intent. Hopefully Andrew Oak's okay. Cause you hate to see that, but yeah, I think the league saw it that way too and said, here, we've got a player who's not dirty, just kind of ran himself out of runway. It was kind of a bad judgment thing more than an intent, but yeah, hopefully they can recover. Cause those are two key players for their teams. So you never like to see either of them out for either reason.
Yeah, and Oak coming off a game one shutout. I hate to say it. Hate to see it too. First and foremost, I hate to see anybody get injured playing the game. And you want everybody to have, like, both teams to have their best against best, right? Have everybody playing, and let's make this as equal a matchup as we possibly can. One other thing that struck me from this series, and it came from Saginaw head coach Chris Lazary's post-game comments following the game two loss. And he talked about the ice conditions. This stood out to me because I remember a time some years ago where Pete DeBoer was the head coach in Kitchener. And boy, oh boy, did Pete DeBoer have problems with the ice conditions at the Memorial Auditorium. And it led to a whole lot of work and a whole lot of effort to try to get those ice conditions improved, and, you know, like in complete new HVAC systems, all kinds of coolers, you name it. They were investing not only time, but money into making the ice better in Kitchener. Now, I know we're talking about Saginaw here, but what struck me, and I'm going to paraphrase, but Lazary said something along the lines of, this has been a problem all year long, and for some reason, we still haven't figured it out. Well, I hate to say it, but that's a really bad look for the organization and the building and the ice that's going to be hosting the Memorial Cup in about a month's time. So if anybody would know how bad the ice is, it would be the home team. And boy, oh boy, if this has been a problem all year long, it's been identified as a problem all year long. I can't see how they're going to fix it in 5 weeks. So what kind of a Memorial Cup with all that stress, all that hockey being played in the building? I would hate to think that the quality of the ice is a factor or even just a talking point when we get around to the National Junior Hockey Championship in May.
Definitely not something you want to be a factor in any of the games, right? And you talked about the Peter DeBoer reference. I think in general, any team who feels they're the faster team or the more skilled team is not going to want the ice to be an equalizer, right? Because if there's any kind of deterioration in ice conditions, it tends to favor the less skilled, slower team. But it just makes play choppier. It's harder to execute. So it evens it out that way. And I think just once you get to the Memorial Cup, all the teams are terrific. So you're not so much worried about one team having an advantage because they're more skilled or faster. They're all pretty equal, but it's just going to degrade the level of play, the quality of play, the the skill we come to expect in this Memorial Cup's showcase for all of the CHL. So the last thing you want is a bunch of pucks bouncing over sticks, missed passes, all those kind of things that come with lower quality ice. So hopefully they sort it out in the next couple of weeks, but it's a little bit concerning.
It's very much concerning from where I'm sitting. And yeah, I think about injury and of course those fluky bounces that could happen that could change the course of a game. And when all the marbles are in the middle, when the Memorial Cup rolls around, you don't want that to be a factor. Okay, still to come on this episode of the OHL podcast. I know it's not unique to the Ontario Hockey League or even the city that's doing it, but come on with your coming on when it comes to selling tickets or not to fans from the opposing team. Plus, what's the going rate for a new arena in a city anyway? And our performers of the week. All of that still coming on this episode of the OHL podcast. All right, Dan, I want to be clear about one thing. The de facto president of the North Bay Battalion fan clubs claim that the Sudbury Wolves are going to have an empty arena because they're not selling tickets, at least not right away, to North Bay fans is a bogus argument. They're going to have fans and lots of them in the Sudbury Community Arena. But the complaint is still well-founded, in my opinion. If I want to buy a ticket for a game in Sudbury, but my postal code has me in North Bay, surely to goodness, I should be able to buy those tickets on a first-come, first-served basis. Shouldn't I? Sudbury, though, shutting out North Bay fans until about 48 hours before puck drop, so Sudbury fans have a longer chance to get the tickets to the games. What do you think?
Of course, the home team wants their building filled with their own fans. However, it's pretty pathetic and small-minded, in my opinion, to try and manipulate your ticket sales to have that occur. A good, strong fan base can come out and support you anyway. Let the chips fall where they may. It's better for hockey anyway. When you have these rivalries, you got fans traveling between cities. North Bay and Sudbury are basically neighbors. You have that real strong atmosphere in the building, and I don't think manipulating in any way. Let the fans, let the chips fall where they may. If there's a strong contingent from North Bay makes it up their way, well then send one back their way. So it reminds me of there's these kind of pathetic things that go on. I think it's a small-minded way of thinking for some of these franchises. And just a quick side anecdote, so I was in Ottawa this weekend and I saw Senators play a home game. And one thing that's always bothered me about the small-mindedness of that arena, because everything else about that arena is a fantastic experience, but when they're announcing visitor goals, mumble, low register, can't make out a single name, announcing three stars, same thing, all the bombast for the home player, then mumble, you can't even make out the name when it's the, and to me, it's just like, those are the types of things that just come across as petty, unprofessional, kind of pathetic, and this kind of falls in that category to me. We're all hockey fans. Everyone's interested in the series. Give everyone a fair shot. You don't, when you start playing games like that, what are you really saying?
If you're watching on our YouTube channel, you would have seen me roll my eyes when Dan talked about mumbling when the visiting team scores a goal or whatever the case may be. You hear that, so to speak, in some OHL arenas too. I'm with you on that, Dan. And heck, can we think about for a moment that for most players in this league, the Ontario Hockey League, it's the highest level they're ever going to achieve. Do you know how cool it probably is? I'll share a quick story, actually. How cool it probably is, though, for a player to hear his name called over the loudspeaker in an arena where thousands of fans are present. Now, this goes way back to minor hockey, but they used to in Kitchener do this thing called Hockey Day in Rangers Nation, where minor hockey teams of a certain age, I think they were around 10 or 11 years old. But anyway, they could apply. They could get the chance to come and play. We would do like 8 minor hockey games on a Sunday before a Rangers game that night. And these kids would come in, they'd get the full big league experience, right? Their dressing room stalls would have their names, all kinds of different things. And then they'd get to stay for the game at night and watch the Rangers play whoever. I got called upon to do the PA for those games. And I'll never forget this. So the kids would come over, the timekeeper's bench is right between the penalty boxes. And sometimes there'd be penalties. And so the kids would be sitting right next to me. I'm announcing whatever. And the one time, and then I'd kibitz with the kids while they're in the penalty box, because what else are you going to do? And the one time I'm calling out the penalty, and this kid beside me is just like grinning ear to ear. And I said, "Hey, what are you smiling about? You just got a penalty." He's like, "Yeah, but you said my name," because he was so excited. And there might have been dozens of fans in the building, right? Family and friends. Anyway, so don't forget that part of it. Like, this is a real experience. And if we want to make it the best experience possible for these young men, give them a little bit of a boost on the sound system, even if they are the visiting team. Don't have to have quite the same enthusiasm, but pick it up a little bit. And to the point on this ticket stuff, I'm with you, Dan. Like, just listen, if Sudbury fans want to make sure they're going to be in the majority anyway, we know that. Like, you're not going to have 4,000 people traveling from North Bay. So let's just start right there. Secondly, encourage them, like, get your tickets fast. If you don't want those, North Bay so-and-sos to get the tickets, well, you better buy them fast or whatever. And visiting fans in the building make for a great atmosphere. To me, it's just, honestly, it's a little bit on the childish side, isn't it? Again, the arena's not going to be empty, but let fans have tickets wherever it is they're buying them from, Espanola, Greater Sudbury, all of the other places up there, and North Bay included. Just over yourself. I just think it smacks of some insecurity as far as I'm concerned. So the other thing I'll add, I think I said this last week because we talked about how well the Erie Otters fans had traveled and how much fun I had watching them enjoy games, because they had a good section up near our broadcast booth. And this should go without saying, but I'm telling you, I was just hearing it when I was in London on the weekend. Fans talk to me often about going to other rinks and the way they are treated when they get there. Mm-hmm. Let fans be fans. Let them cheer for their team in your arena. It's okay. There's two teams on the ice. You can cheer for your team. Let them cheer for their team. We don't have to make the experience uncomfortable for anybody. Anyway, I find this to just be goofy. And yet, here we are spending about 7-8 minutes talking about it on the OHL podcast. The way to go, Sudbury, you sucked us in.
But it's true, and it's a hill I would die on too. I know some people, there are people out there that think, oh, it's great to get into it with the opposing fans and make their lives miserable. But at the end of the day, this is entertainment. It's junior hockey. You're going to watch teenagers play hockey. Let's maintain a little bit of level of respect here. And you talk about the ticket point about not allowing North Bay fans travel. Well, what about the kids in North Bay? You're trying to grow the game that really want to see their team play in the playoffs, and you're stifling that. And the fans that travel and make the trip, do you want their experience to be miserable so they don't come back? If no one wants to come see the game, or then why does anyone care? I think you hit the nail on the head with childish. It's juvenile. And maintain a level of respect. If you want to have some good natured ribbing between fan bases in the stands, great, fine. Cheer louder than the other team. But to make it miserable on them, or try and ruin their experience, or shut them out of the building entirely, come on. Are we grown adults here?
Sadly, I think we sometimes forget that when there is a win or a loss at stake on the ice. And I'll just remind you that it wasn't all that long ago, the 2011 Memorial Cup in Mississauga, they called that arena, still then the Hershey Center, the Bayshore South, because Owen Sound fans in that OHL championship traveled so well to come from Owen Sound. It's a 2+ hour trip from Owen Sound all the way into the greater Toronto area and Mississauga. And if it wasn't for those Owen Sound fans making that trip, guess what? That building would not have been sold out even for the OHL championship. So don't forget that aspect of it as well. All right, we're going to stay in Sudbury because I find this really interesting and I do geek out a little bit. I went back a few years ago and looked at all of the opportunities for naming rights on arenas across the Ontario Hockey League to find out which franchise made the most off naming rights. And I'm just curious about what those things go for. And arena stuff really does kind of get me geeking out. I've had a chance over my years in this league to see a lot of arenas change, right? It's not the London Ice House anymore. Budweiser Gardens is probably the gold standard. The old Windsor Arena's gone. Kingston. I could run through a whole bunch of them. North Bay is the same old arena, but the team's back there and they've done some renovations. The lists just go on and on. We're in what is now the Sleeman Center, used to be the Guelph Sports and Entertainment Center, which is, you know, the old Guelph Memorial Auditorium is long gone. So it just goes on and on and on. Sudbury has a new arena proposal back on the table. Politically, I don't know how this is going to work in the city of Sudbury, Dan. The big debate is around whether or not the arena should be downtown or out in this new growing kind of commercial area called the Kingsway in Sudbury. A few years ago, there was a $215 million plan to put an arena, which would have, I think, also included a casino, if I'm not mistaken, but out on the Kingsway. That got scuttled. The council wanted it downtown. The city wanted it downtown for all of the downtown revitalization that comes with that. Now they have a $200 million proposal. So $15 million, quote unquote, less. I just don't know politically what the appetite is like. Some sabers already being rattled politically. Here's the bigger thing that I wanted to get into. What's the going rate for a right-sized junior hockey arena that will suitably host an Ontario Hockey League team? Well, $200 million is the number on the table, and that gets you a 5,800-seat arena plus entertainment center. Brantford hasn't put out a number on theirs yet, but we talked about this last week with Michael Andlauer, the Bulldogs owner, saying, you build this arena, I'm committing the Bulldogs long-term as your tenant. I would suspect you're going to be in a similar ballpark, but 5,800 seats, sports, entertainment, lots of things that come with that, and economic spinoff that comes with that, but $200 million. Just to put it in perspective, when the then Sky Dome was built back in 1989, $215 million. That held 50,000 fans, by the way, back in the day.
And how much was the rental they just did on the lower level this offseason? I believe it was more than that.
So. Yes, there you go. Yeah, so yeah. Just you know how these costs have escalated over time. Anyway, $200 million. That is a big nut for an Ontario Hockey League sized city, but that's the price of doing business right now. And do you want something like, I love Sudbury, but that arena it's got some warts right now.
And generally too, when you're talking about that kind of an investment in today's dollars at the going rate of everything for a community of that size, that's why it always becomes a conversation of, well, what else can we use this venue for? How can we make it make sense for more people? And that's why sometimes the right size for junior hockey, I think in my mind, the right size for junior hockey is somewhere in that $6,000 to $8,000 or seat range. Makes a great atmosphere. You don't want it too cavernous if you're not selling out, but it's a good number. Maybe a little higher in the bigger markets that can fill it. Having said that, the communities then often come in and say, but yeah, but if we want to attract decent sized concerts, you need 10 to 12. And so suddenly you get into this discussion of, well, what actually makes sense. But I think when we talked about the Sudbury Arena, Mike, earlier, going back probably a year, my only point was that seldom do costs come down. And if they do, you got to ask yourself why. And I won't name the facility, but I've seen some brilliant new facilities that were built really well, wide concourses, all the fixings. And then I've seen some that probably tried to bring their tab down by 1 or 2% by cutting corners on things like not having stick racks in the change rooms. Just little things you notice that once you get using a facility, it's like, well, I kind of actually wish they had spent the extra, you know, a few bucks to make this a state-of-the-art facility. So all I'm saying is that probably the sooner you do it, the better. And you got to question what corners you're cutting.
It's a great point. And those 5,800 seats are the fixed seats that would be there, for example, for Sudbury Wolves games. So when you're bringing in other things, you know, concerts, et cetera, you probably got some more space, especially when the ice comes out, all that different thing. So, you know, maybe you're talking 7,500 or more fans that can get in there. But, you know, you talk about how costs are only going up when it comes to these projects. And I was taken back to the last renovation that was done at the Kitchener Memorial Auditorium, which obviously I know pretty well. And it strikes me, look, my bias notwithstanding, I would still put the Kitchener Memorial Auditorium up against any arena in this league. And it can get 7,000 plus in there for a hockey game. So it's already larger than what they're about to put in up in Sudbury. But a little over a decade ago, when they did the last expansion at the Memorial Auditorium, a plan came forward for a roughly $70 million new arena. And then when that idea got out into the public sphere, there were a lot of different conversations around, well, okay, but if we're doing that, we should do this and we could add that. And all of a sudden there were all these fingers in the pie and the price tag got up to $135 million. Again, this is more than a decade ago. And then everybody got cold feet and they said, okay, but in the next 10 to 15 years, we're going to put the plan in place to get that new, larger sports and entertainment center for the region of Waterloo / the city of Kitchener. Well, those conversations have not even begun, unless they're happening very quietly behind closed doors. And if it was $135 million 12 years ago, and it's $200 million in Sudbury for 5,800 fixed seats, I'm just going to start the bidding at about $600 million if the city of Kitchener ever gets serious about doing an arena like this. And I would submit to you that at that price, the city of Kitchener is never going to get serious about doing an arena. I don't know how, unless you're getting a whole bucket full of private money, I don't know how you're going to do it.
Especially because one thing I think regular people that aren't involved in these types of things are having trouble understanding. They see these high inflationary times, 3% and 4% at times, say, wow, inflation's crazy. In the construction industry, you're at times talking 30-40%. So it's out of control. It's going to get harder and harder to build these things. So another consideration when you're thinking of whether or not it's the right time.
Absolutely. Okay. Like I said, I geek out over stuff like that. So thanks for bearing with me as we went through some of that. But I just think it's so interesting for these other markets that may at some point want to upgrade their existing arenas. These things do not come inexpensively. One last piece of business for us this week on the OHL podcast. That, of course, is our performer of the week. We do prospects of the week for the NHL draft during the regular season, but into the playoffs, we go with performers. Dansky, who you got this week?
Well, Mike, I actually had a veritable tie. So if it's okay with you, I might let you go first, just in case you have one of the same guys.
That is absolutely fine. I'm a little embarrassed to say, but I guess you can see where my bias lies when the playoffs roll around. I love goaltenders that step up and show themselves to be big game, big time goaltenders. And we already mentioned Mike McIver, who's kind of thrown into the fire in North Bay with Dom DeVincentis out. I'm with an honorable mention to Mike, and he already got that nod from the Ontario Hockey League. I'm actually looking at Jacob Oster, who we also talked about earlier in this episode with the Oshawa Generals. I'm taking it back to the final game versus Barrie, when Oster, and that's exactly a week ago, our recording date, Oster put an exclamation point on that series with the shutout win. He has now only allowed 4 goals in the 2 games versus the Ottawa 67. So do the math. In his past 3 games, it's a 1.33 goals against average. But how about this? A 957 save percentage. A 957 save percentage, 89 of 93, 88 of 92, something like that. Anyway, 957 save percentage, and Jacob Oster is my performer of the week.
Great call. And it was not one of my two, but not for lack of merit, because obviously Oster and a few of those Oshawa Generals, I had trouble when I looked at the Generals which one to pick, because there was 3 or 4 that definitely were worthy. So anyway, my tie, Mike, I'm going to give some love to the overage community this week. I was having trouble deciding between Jordan Dantino in the Sioux and Justin Ertl in North Bay, both 2003 born players who really have stepped up in the playoffs. And you know what I love in the playoffs? I love when you see a guy running at, you know, 0.6, 0.7 points a game during the season. Suddenly they're over a point in the game in the playoffs. Players that step up at playoff time, both have done that. Dantino, 8 points in his 6 games. Ertl with, I believe, 10 and 7. Huge pluses on the plus minus ledger. Just doing what you need your overage players to do this time of year, right? And being a huge factor for teams, a bigger factor than they probably even were in the regular season, which is what you need at this. And maybe even like a tiny honorable mention to Caleb Lawrence in London as well. So overage players really stepping up this time of year, and I love to see it.
It's funny. I looked at both Ertl and Dantino for that exact reason. What did you do in the regular season? What are you doing now when your junior career is on the line? And I love to see it. And then I went to my bias, just like last week, Sam Hillenbrandt. And this week I'm sticking with goaltender. So note to Ontario Hockey League goaltenders, you're going to have to stand on your ding dang head if you think I'm making you a performer of the week again next week, I'll find a skater, okay? Some way, somehow. That guy over there, his name is Dan Mahar. You'll find him on Twitter at his name, Dan Mahar. I'm Mike Farwell at Farwell underscore OHL. Send us an email anytime, OHLpodcast@rogers.com. Please give us a like, leave a review, a rating, and send a message. Follow the YouTube channel. We're really having fun doing this. Love having you along with us. And we'll have another episode out 1 week from this week, the OHL Podcast.
Hi, I'm Emily Roger, and I host a leadership show called The Boiling Point with my co-host, Dave Vail. Together, we sit down with trailblazing entrepreneurs, thought leaders, and movement makers who are driving meaningful change in our world. The show is all about exploring the lives and perspectives of leaders who are making a difference. Join us for insightful conversations that challenge the status quo, spark new ideas, and inspire you to take action. Find us on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or at BoilingPointPodcast.com.
Another Sound Off Media Company podcast.